In the air, Srijan takes it! India wins!
He'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the 81 All Out podcast. This is your host, Siddhartha Vaidyanathan. And I'm joined by two regulars, Ashoka, who is at ABVan on Twitter. Also joining us, Kartikeya Date at Cricketing View on Twitter. I will link Kartikeya's Substack. I'll link the pieces that he has written for, the page on ESPN Cricket Info where you can find all his pieces. And we don't have Mahesh today. He's missing. I think he's probably watching some tennis in some corner of the world or something like that. But we will hopefully have him in the next episode. Anyway, so we're here today to preview the World Cup that is starting soon in a few days. The World Cup being exclusively hosted by India for the first time. We must mention, because the past editions that have been hosted in the subcontinent have had a joint hosts. 1987 was an India-Pakistan joint hosting venture, and 1996 was an India-Pakistan-Sri Lanka joint venture, and 2011 was an India-Sri Lanka-Bangladesh joint venture. So this is the first time that an ODI World Cup is going to be played exclusively in India. The format is similar to what was in 2019, 10 teams. Of course, a huge debate about whether you can even call it a World Cup with just 10 teams in it. But, that is a debate for another day, I guess. But here we have it. We have the World Cup, 10 teams. Despite the muted build-up, I think compared to other World Cups, this World Cup has had a largely muted build-up. But over the last couple of weeks, things have started really stepping up, and people have everyone has started to focus to the one-day format and the World Cup in general. One of the good things about the World Cup is that because all teams are playing, the focus of generally the cricketing world will be on that. Otherwise, when a series is going on, there are three other series generally going on. There are so many franchise tournaments going on that the attention is a bit scattered. But now there is a global tournament that will happen over a period of a month, more than a month. And so that's something exciting. I think it promises to be a really good World Cup. I mean, as much as we can say, we don't know much about what could happen. I mean, there are so many unknowns. And the one-day game itself, as we discussed in the last two podcasts, the one-day game itself is at a stage of evolution where, it is sort of reaching towards the T20 format, but there are also phases, depending on conditions, that it moves more towards the test format. We have often spoken on this podcast about batting and hitting, and, one-day cricket requires you to both bat and hit, because if you have perfect conditions, then of course you can continue to try and hit for 50 overs, but it's hard to hit over 50 overs. So you need somewhere in the period to mix it up with some, batting and accumulation and putting together a partnership and the kind of things that you would do traditionally in a test match. So we'll get to it. We'll start, we can talk a bit about the big picture, but then we will get into the teams that we are looking forward to watching. And then, of course, we are an India-focused podcast, so we will talk quite a bit about the Indian team and what we can expect from them. And it's been, the last time they won a World Cup was in 2011, and they won it at home in the final. So this is, they reached two semifinals after that. And in fact, after the Champions Trophy a few years after 2011, they haven't won an ICC tournament, which has, of course, been a big thing about India not winning ICC tournaments for 10 years. That is a big deal. Anyway, let's begin. Ashoka, maybe some big picture thoughts. World Cup, how's the build-up been for you? Are you looking forward to it? Or is it just another tournament before CSK start playing again?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, no? No, I mean, this year already peaked, man. I mean, that Gujarat and CSK final, I don't think the World Cup has like its task cut out. It has to, you know, have an amazing tournament for us to forget that. I mean, so that is one thing. And they have, you know, suitably organized this World Cup during a monsoon season where every second game you see rains. So, there, I mean, this is like a very muted World Cup and there is not much of a hype. I want to be hyped, but I can't because I, first of all, these guys start your ticketing like in the nth hour and your promos come out only like 15 days before. So, and those promos, I don't even know, I don't understand. It's very generic. So, there's not much of a, you know, a traditional World Cup enthu going around this time. Or maybe I mean, the simplest explanation is maybe I'm a little bit older now. So, I don't know which of these explanation is the reason why it's just, you know, a very lukewarm start to the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also one-day cricket in general, right? I mean, between 2019 and now, there has actually not been as much one-day cricket as we would normally see. I mean, because of a variety of reasons. We have only now recently started. It's almost like the Asia Cup, we have only now has revived our memories of one-day cricket. And we're like, oh, okay, this is how this format is and all that. So, yeah, that is probably also the reason.
Yeah, and you know, there have been what, some 40, 45 ODIs in the last 4 or 5 years for each team. They have not played more than that. Nobody has played even 50, 60 ODIs. Maybe that is also the reason why. Predominantly, it can't be helped because the last 4 years, 2 years were lost to COVID. So, it is understandable that this format, that nobody has played much of this format anyways.
Yeah. So, that's why I think it's like in the in-between phase. Like, sometimes we feel that ODIs are fast approaching the T20 sort of rhythm and T20 hitting stakes. Like, I was seeing some of the South Africa-Australia games. I mean, Henrik Claassen, the way he was hitting. It was almost like he was playing a T20 over an extended period of time. But then, obviously, when you talk about India and we talk about conditions, you will get pitches where, you know, you will have a 240 play 240. And then that will become more like a test match rhythm rather than T20. Anyway, Kartikeya, thoughts, general build-up, what are your, what are you looking forward to? What do you think could happen?
No, I think it's an open World Cup. I mean, I think most World Cups since, I mean, with the exception of maybe 2007, I would say, and actually, deceptively enough, I think 1987, the World Cups have tended to be quite open tournaments. One of the interesting things is that the hosts have been favored in all the recent World Cups. You know, England won in England, Australia won in Australia, for that India won in India. I don't know whether that's because the hosts have a genuine advantage or because, you know, England just happened to be really good and Australia just happened to be really good in 2015.
And Australia played New Zealand in 2015, so who are also the hosts.
Hosts. So, I think one of the things that's happened is that there's a lot of fragmentation now. I mean, so, you know, we always find ourselves asking, well, you know, hey, why does this matter? And my view of that has always been that that's sort of a, if you're asking that question, then you're probably not really inclined to watch cricket anyway. I mean, you think about the 80s and the 90s, and you a contest of that nature, it would be something you would look forward to for days. But now, as Ashoka pointed out, you get to see that in one form or the other, every month, every other month, you get to watch that. You know, so, I mean, and now you also have this thing on cable and internet and media where, you know, whoever is playing anywhere in the world, everybody can follow it. You know, so it's not like we are restricted to, you know, the weekly, you know, the 30-minute cricket highlight show on Prime Sports.
The week that was.
Yeah, the week that was. To watch like West Indies versus Australia or something like that. That's not really the case now. So I think the build-up, so such as it is a bit of a problem because there's so much. I mean, there's no shortage anymore. There's no scarcity anymore. You know, so I mean, and that's also why no players, no teams are really rated nowadays. So people are not frightened of anybody. You know, the way they used to be frightened of people. I mean, you have no sense of, you know, being able to build up somebody in your head. You know, that this bowler is a menace, or that spinner is a mystery spinner. You know, or you know, that batter is really reliable in like the last 15 overs of an ODI. You know, we don't really have that anymore. We know everybody. We see even with I'll take the example of like the icon of the last decade, no? Dhoni. He was a big feature in the recent IPL, but everybody knew he's like a not anywhere close to the Dhoni of the peak Dhoni years. So. And everybody knew he was going to flop. Everybody knew he was like basically reduced to like two swings. But he's still there. So they have become cartoon characters in a different sense, you know, where, you know, instead of like being cartoon characters who you go, you know, you have to switch on the TV at a particular time, at a particular day, to watch. You just switch on, you go on YouTube, you can watch them all the time. So that's part of the reason, I think, why the build-up is so difficult. Because all this quality is just at hand. And so don't really appreciate it very much. But in cricket terms, I think it's an open World Cup, mainly because I think the format is better than it's ever been, in my opinion. You know, it has the whole stalemate is gone, you know, so we don't have to suffer through, like, you know, faltu bowlers bowling to batters with lots of fielders on the boundary. And, you know, there isn't like that, you know, jugaad, so to speak, that used to be there in the 90s and the 2000s.
The boring middle overs.
Yeah. You know, yeah. It was not just the boring middle overs. It was like, you know, it was like teams trying to pack in mediocrity, you know, and trying to get away with as little damage as possible. And then Jayasurya used to bowl like outside leg stump, you know, over the wicket to the right-hander with a six fielders on the leg side and whatnot. And there was no reverse sweep or anything at that time. You know, I often wonder like what these guys would have done to like that kind of bowling, you know, Chris Harris, Jayasurya, all those bowlers, you know, I think they would have been thumped, you know. So, but I think the other thing is also that BCCI is now this huge, extremely powerful entity, you know. It doesn't seem to feel the need to welcome anybody or be kind to anybody or be nice to anybody anymore. You know, it is like it exists. And its existence is a favor to the world of cricket. And so everybody else has to just live in that world. At least that's what they seem to think. And they seem to lack the sort of the, you know, the basic adult artfulness whereby you, even if that's true, you show yourself to be a nice person, to be a kind person. You know, that there is just this pathological inability to demonstrate any kindness to anybody. You know, any decency must never, ever break through. You know, everything has to be perpetually hostile. You know, whereby anytime anybody asks something, the response is, we don't owe you a thing. Just this endless array of these kinds of petty, small rules, you know, where constantly everybody is navigating some threat, you know, some really petty threat. And it makes it just like, you know, it's like, it's not really a coming together of anybody. You know, it's basically just another business transaction that's going on. And so that's one of the reasons why there's no buildup. You know, I mean, who wants that? You know, who wants to look forward to that? You know, can you think of a kind word from anybody in BCCI, any word of welcome from anybody in BCCI?
Yeah, sure. I don't disagree at all. You can be nice to people. That is a valid point. First of all, you have to be nice to your, you know,
your own people.
To your ticket paying customers, man. you put a 5-hour waiting line in on an online website.
Ashoka, you have to be nice to somebody, no? You must have that in you, no? That to be able to be nice to somebody, you know? Now, okay, nobody is saying garland the players or anything like that. But what, yeah? Who, you tell me, who in the BCCI is the spokesman for the hosts? You know, who is speaking for the hosts of the World Cup every day, every week? Every time there's news, if there's rain, who's informing the fans? Saying that, oh, be careful, you know, there's a lot of rain today. This warm-up match is going to be washed off. So, you know, take care, look at the weather report and come. If you really want to come, come. But we are just warning you that, you know, this may be washed off. You know, who's doing that? That basic, to the BCCI entirely functions as one bloody anonymous source, man. You know, I would not be surprised if they got their chance, no, if they didn't have a Twitter account, the BCCI would release the Indian squad also as an anonymously sourced story. You know, they wouldn't even have a decency to, you know, say properly that, oh,
what do you mean anonymous?
Representing us.
What do you mean anonymous?
Unsourced.
Our two great servants of Indian cricket, Mufa and Johns, they will announce cricket. They will announce the squad on Twitter with all pomp and splendor, man.
They will announce it even before BCCI does it.
Yeah.
And it's just okay. It's just needless belligerence. No, the public also doesn't really care much about the BCCI. No, when Pakistan came, they got a very warm welcome and all that. You see, if Pakistan are going to play, there are going to be fans going to go watch them and all that. You know, you will have the usual racket going on. But, and, you know, the cynical thing is that the BCCI really profits hugely from Pakistan now.
Yeah, that's why India and Pakistan have to play in the beginning, opening rounds of every world tournament. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a coincidence that they're drawing lots and like magically India and Pakistan are drawn against each other every time.
No, the reason why it happens in other countries is because after a point, if the boards behave like this with the public, there is a chance that the public will actually not care and the public will stop going to games and they will have, and of course they have other sports to follow and they will follow that. In India, the ticket-paying public are taken for granted. Where will they go? The BCCI's attitude is, where will they go? Even if they have to come through chain link fence, they will come. So that is their approach. Yeah.
So this is why we some weeks ago I had that whole thing, no, that basically fans should stop buying tickets to the stadium. No, I mean if the BCCI wants the stadiums to be filled for their TV show, then the BCCI should pay the fans, no, to appear in the stadium.
No, and because of this ticket mess up, right?
Yeah.
See, the BCCI, in the ideal case, in the ideal world, I would think, would want every single game in this World Cup to be sold out. Packed houses. Right? Yeah. That is great for TV. That is great for their thing. But trust me, because of this ticketing mess that they have done, there will be games between Afghanistan and Bangladesh and things which will be watched by 2,000 people in the stands.
Yeah.
People have not been allowed to buy tickets. Like Australia, Afghanistan, for instance, there was some news report that came out that people were not, that they have not opened up a mass chunk of tickets for those games.
What really gets to me here is that none of this stuff is like some great innovation. You know, I mean, they have been organizing tournaments in all different sports, in all different countries for decades now. People know how to do this. How come they can't do it properly, man? Like, what is going on?
I'm sure they can do it properly. They just don't want to, because I think it's just an approach. Like, okay, what? People, anyway, people are coming. Anyway, TV rights money is going up. Anyway, whatever, all the sponsors are not going to back out. So, to hell with it.
But everything changes, no, Siddharth? This is not going to be forever, no? This cricket's monopoly is not going to be forever. When it goes, it will go.
You know.
And then BCCI will regret it.
Yeah, but listen, they are not, if they are even thinking in that direction, they will approach this differently. They are thinking only about, like, you know, now and present, and they have this sense of invincibility that, okay, cricket is like the greatest thing. It is going to be the biggest sport in the world. BCCI is, you know, on par with NFL. That's how they talk and that's how they think. So, in fact, recently Jay Shah came out with this outrageous statement about how, comparing the BCCI's equal pay scale to the US Open. This thing, pay scale. While the US Open has been having like equal pay for a long time. I don't understand what, just like randomly say anything or what. So anyway, we can talk about Jay Shah, BCCI, this shenanigans for many, many days. Let us get to the tournament itself. One of the things I thought, I mean, as I said, we will talk about India, but before that, I thought one of the things we can do is like, we can talk about multiple other teams that are here. So each one of us can maybe, you know, pick a team or two and see, you know, if any team sort of excites them, teams that they want to watch. I mean, all teams, of course, will be exciting to watch, but any particular team that you wish to do well or something. And for me personally, it is South Africa, you know, because South Africa have never won a one-day World Cup. And I've always wished that at some point of time, they do end up winning it. There's, of course, been the stereotypical choke narrative around them. I mean, of course, that narrative is built around like some two games over a period of many, many years. And each of those teams were very different. So you can't like say that the team that didn't win the semifinal in 99 had the same approach as the team that didn't win a game in 2015 against New Zealand or something. But anyway, that is also something we have spoken about in a podcast. But anyway, I was watching a bit of the South Africa-Australia series recently, the one-day series, and it was really thrilling to see the last three games and the way they batted, the way they sort of pulled off mighty wins against Australia. Like, those were like big, big wins. They were not just wins by small margins. And the batting, I mean, it reminded me of England in the pre-2019 phase where the top six were just going for it. I mean, of course, they got good pitches. They got really good batting pitches. But there was no let-up. They went for it. They were going for their shots throughout. No middle-over consolidation, etc. Just keep going for it. And they have a good top six. And in Marco Jansen, they have found this really good all-rounder in there. I mean, he is now... He's always been a very good bowler, but I didn't realize he's a really handy batter down the order. It's long, it can hit the big shots. He's quite a player to have for them down there. And then in Maharaj and Shamsi, they have two bowlers who can, I think, do really well in India. Both of them have had good success in the format. And so really looking forward to them doing well. And I'm hoping that... this is the year when they actually can win that World Cup. What do you guys think? So, Ashoka, did you watch that series?
I watched it bits and pieces, but I was more into the Asia Cup, which was... See, my whole thing during that time was, to give context, Asia Cup and this series was happening, you know, simultaneously in the same period of time. And then my thinking was, if you are going to come to India for a World Cup, is batting on roads the right way to go about it? Sure, you might get a road or two.
Especially in the October-November time thing. Yeah.
Yeah. But there are a lot of matches in Lucknow, Delhi, Chennai. So I thought, you know, the teams that were playing the Asia Cup, and the, among the teams that played the Asia Cup, India specifically, had a greater, better preparation to the World Cup than, say, you know, smashing bowlers for 400 runs on roads. So that is something that is, you know, one thing that concerns me. Second thing that concerns me about South Africa is that their batting is really good. I mean, they are going to see, they are going to have to sit out Hendricks, I think, Risa Hendricks, because their top six is really good. Bouma, Deacock, and then Rassi van der Dussen, Aiden Markram, Klaassen, Miller.
Klaassen.
So that's, yeah. Klaassen and Miller. So six people to keeper options. So they are set there. Top six is set.
And then Marco Janssen at seven.
Seven, that's the problem. So see, now what's happened is their Nokia and Magala have got injured. So that meant that they have added a second all-rounder in Pelukwaya. That's how I spell. I can't spit out. So let me say Pelukwaya. But so that's the thing. So my problem is that they're, you know, they, if you get 3-4 wickets, would Klaassen and Miller start, you know, consolidating or playing out from, let's say, they are 100 for 4 in 23 overs. Likely to happen. So you have 27 overs and then you have the two playing and then one Marco Janssen. Maharaj can hit, but how much? I have not seen him hit, you know, that many times. And after that, it's the tail. So that is their problem. If they get stuck in one of those spin pitches where teams get, you know, 3-4 wickets, they are in trouble. So, but if they don't, like if their top 6-7 play well, they are going to be a very good team because their bowling quality is very good. Very good, actually. It's about, I think this is the India 2019 dilemma, right? That India had in England. Like, you have a very pronounced tail. So, your top seven have to be very careful about how they handle the 50 overs. That is probably South Africa's problem in this World Cup. Otherwise, they've gotten... I mean, they are one of the most experienced side, man. Look at all of them. They are all in their, like, early 30s or late 20s. Most of them. Marco Janssen is 23. Kotsia is 22. After that, everybody is 27 and above. Yeah, 27 and above. So, they are fairly experienced side. If you contrast them with Bangladesh, Bangladesh has three people in their 30s, two or three in their late 20s. Rest are all young guys. So, they are like very experienced, South Africa is. So, it'll be interesting. They may... I also want them to be at least in the semifinal. Because this is one year, this is one World Cup where they are flying super low under the radar. I read somewhere, I think probably Quick Info, that there is a Rugby World Cup going on, is it? If I am not wrong.
Yeah. And they are the favorites there.
Yeah, so the entire nation is following rugby and this team has quietly flown under the radar, which might be a good thing for them. I mean, they can chill out and play, you know, good cricket.
I mean, I see some of the early games they play, like the first among the top 4-5 games. They are playing in Delhi, Lucknow, Bombay and Chennai. So, again, it depends that on the conditions. You know, Chennai can easily backfire on them if it is like the IPL type spinning pitches. But
Lucknow is also...
Yeah, so it all depends on the kind of conditions they get. And if they get flat roads, then they should be in good shape. But otherwise, it's a challenge. Yeah. Going to you, Ashoka, is there any particular team that you are looking forward to?
Yeah, one is South Africa, as you said. One is New Zealand also. Because New Zealand... You know, they have put Kane Williamson as captain, but they've said he will not play the first match. But they look I think New Zealand have this unsaid policy not to pick anybody under 25 into their team. I mean, outside of Rachin Ravindra, again, everybody is like 27, 30, 32, 33. So they too are, you know, a slightly experienced squad. They have very good bowling as well. Like, and, you know, and they have, they're carrying in good spinner in Santner. Maybe Rachin Ravindra, I don't know if he's good, but he's okay. But
Sodhi.
So Ishwadi, I am a little concerned about, because he took 6 wickets recently, fine, but he is slightly erratic. He's like the Shadab Khan problem for Pakistan, right? Like, he'll bowl that one short ball and then get whacked. So, yeah, so they are going to do it with pace if they are going to do it. Matt Hendry is really good in ODIs, underrated, Bolt, Ferguson, Saudi, I don't know, I heard he was injured. But these three players and Ishwadi should do, and Santner should do. And they have a lot of options too.
No, like, but they are going to carry Saudi, he's going to play.
I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
that's the
problem. Yeah, I read somewhere that they are going to carry him for one or two games if they have to.
But
they will play.
But Saudi, if there's no swing Saudi in one day, could be a liability.
You will find swing somewhere, man. Dharamshala they're playing a couple of games now. So, So they are a very good team. I recently saw Will Young bat in that Bangladesh series. I've not seen him bat before, but he was pretty solid. So they have a solid top order, good middle order, and they have a lot
Phillips
of
Phillips is a good hitter, right?
Yeah, Glenn Phillips is a good hitter. Mark Chapman, I don't know if he'll be in the 11, but they have Nisham, they have Santner, they have Daryl Mitchell. Daryl Mitchell is one of their mainstays. And so they are looking very solid. I mean, there is nothing to complain about. So South Africa and New Zealand are two teams that I'm hoping will come through to the semifinals.
Yeah. It'll be funny if South Africa and New Zealand end up in the Rugby World Cup final and also in the Cricket World Cup final. That'll be quite a contrast. But the one thing about conditions we must mention, though, I mean, you know, there is India, especially the venues that India are playing in, some of these venues offer like a wide range of conditions. Like in Chennai and Mumbai and all, it depends on the day and it depends on the pitches they prepare. You could either get a 250, a really good 250 game, or you could get a 360. So the swing is really wild.
Yeah. Another thing you have to mention is that this is an ICC tournament, right? So ICC supervises how the pitches will be. So they give the guidelines. But I am thinking beyond a point, the natural soil and the conditions of that pitch, you can't change. I mean, if it's going to turn, it's going to turn. That's all. I don't know what you can do in a short term period that you can make it a road or whatnot. I don't know if you can do that. But yeah, so that is another thing. So these two teams, if they have a good run, see, basically what? To end up in top four, you have to beat 5 sides, right? Minimum. 4 or 5 sides. Yeah, these two guys have it in them. New Zealand and South Africa can beat 5 sides.
I think both Australia and England are a bit overvalued as far as I can tell. I mean, their results have not been great recently. They've not really settled on a combination.
Yeah, but Kartikeya, Australia do this very deceptive thing. When they play these bilaterals, they never play their full team. And, you know, if you see, there was no Stark, there was no Cummins, they do all sorts of random experiments. And then they'll come for the World Cup and they'll get everybody. And you saw, in that third one day against India, they basically hammered India. So, you know, you never know with Australia.
Yeah, that's true. You never know. But I don't think they're as good as we seem to think they are. You know, I mean, I think paradoxically, Australia's test team is much better than people think it is. And I think their one-day side is not as good as people think it is. You know, I mean, they have Mitchell Stark, who's a great one-day wicket-taking bowler. And, you know, Josh Hazlewood on his day can be unplayable. But the point is that I think that this World Cup, the one of the reasons why it's so open is that basically wicket, the ability to take wickets in the middle overs is going to be really, really important in this World Cup. And I have a feeling that one of the teams where I think which might be a little bit undervalued in that regard is Bangladesh, you know, because they've got a lot of options in those middle overs, you know, and they've got a lot of players who can do like two or three things really well, you know, Mehdi, Litton, Mushfiqur.
Mehdi has become an all-rounder, man, now.
Shakib. And you know, when the circumstances are not sort of seam dominated, no, then these teams can sort of get on a roll and sort of create a stranglehold of sorts. And if that happens, then they could easily win 5-6 games like at a stretch. And once they're in the semi-final, then all bets are off. So I'm actually interested in seeing how Bangladesh go. Now, on the flip side, Bangladesh have not played against India in a one-day game in a quarter of a century in India, which I think I'm right in saying that. Before they became a test-playing nation, they played a one-day game in India. They haven't done that. And I was really surprised by that, because in the test format, India have hosted Bangladesh several times. But for some reason, one-day tournament, one-day series has not happened.
And several times also only started in, recently.
2000.
There was a long stretch for which they are... No. Yeah. There was a long stretch for which India didn't call Bangladesh even for tests. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like now that is going to increase because Bangladesh are getting better. So, but you know, so that is an unknown, because they really don't have a lot of experience of playing in India. And one of the things that we've known about the subcontinent is that India is different to Sri Lanka and Bangladesh and even Pakistan, as far as like, you know, a subcontinental venue is concerned. You know, Pakistan tends to have much flatter pitches than India. And, you know, Sri Lanka tends to have much more seam-friendly conditions in some cases, especially because a lot of their grounds are like not in, you know, enclosed big cities. So the sea breeze is really significant in like Hambantota and some of those venues where they've been playing a lot of one-day cricket recently. I'm looking for basically two things. One is which team has got wicket-taking ability in the middle overs, which means that, you know, wicket-taking ability with the new ball is one thing. Like, a lot of teams have got that. Like, six, seven teams have got that. Like, they have bowlers who can move the new ball. They will get seam movement. They'll swing the ball. And, you know, they will survive. And they will get the openers out. They will get one or two quick early wickets. Regular. But really what matters is whether you can get through 3, 4, 5, 6 in the middle overs, you know, and which team has got that and which team has been building up for that. And I think like given that, you know, the middle overs in India, that's going to probably depend on spin. I think Bangladesh are probably, you know, a good money bet. Or at least a better bet than they appear to be. I think basically it's like, you know, you need to have, you're going to bowl, let's say 25, 30 overs of spin out of 50, right? And so you're going to have a lot of teams which are going to try to hit boundaries of the spinners. And I think basically the best teams will be the bowling sides which force more boundary hitting by batters, like force batters to sweep from the stumps if they want to hit boundaries. You know, like if you have, and this is where I am a little skeptical of like Sodhi and Shadab and some of these sort of conventional leg spinners, you know, because I think they have a tendency to go for fours in, you know, through like free hits, like through low risk shots, like spare cuts and bulls and things like that. You know, you need to basically force the batter to sweep from the stumps. That's what I'm looking for. Which team is going to have the bowling which can force that, which can force the sweep and the reverse sweep as the like the primary boundary hitting options for the batters, you know. And if a team can force that a lot, then that's going to be a hard team to beat. You know, it's also one of the reasons why I'm not so sure about England, you know, because see, in 2019 in England, England were able to, their seamers were first of all were significantly sort of effective. And secondly, they had Archer. You know, now they are trying to get Archer to play in this World Cup, but that seems to be up in the air. I mean, I've read stories to the effect that he'll play definitely, and I've read stories to the effect that, oh, it'll be rushed and it's not going to work out really. But the England, I don't know where England are going to take their wickets.
Talking about spin, spin being a major part in the middle overs, Ashoka, can you elaborate on what you were mentioning in our group chat? You were saying that Pakistan will probably have a bit of a tricky part in that regard.
Yeah, they have already had that during the Asia Cup, right? Like, Shadab basically lacks control. He can't enforce. So, Babar is either forced to, you know, get overs out of Salman Ali Agha or Iftikhar. So, now what they have tried in this yesterday, Pakistan played New Zealand
warm-up.
Yeah. They had Usama Mir, that is the bowler. I mean, he was a leg spinner. So the problem that Pakistan have is exactly what KD was saying. They don't have, you can blast someone with Haris Rauf and say Shaheen Afridi at the top of the order. And they did in the first match in the Asia Cup, which was washed out between Pakistan and India. They took the top order out, but Ishan Kishan and Hardik Pandya brought India back to 260-265, which was not a given, which was not like Pakistan would have walked that chase on that pitch. It was not a given. So Pakistan have a problem of, you know, middle order. From overs 15 to 40, they are in trouble. I don't know what they're going to do. It's the same with England. So, you know, what they have is Adil Rashid and Moeen Ali and Liam Livingston. And if they are going to be creative, Joe Root. That's it. I mean, David Malan will bowl leg breaks, but come on, they are not going to bowl David Malan.
He may get hammered.
Yeah, they are not going to bowl him. But what they all have is that Sam Curran, David Willey, Chris Woakes, Ben Stokes himself, and then, you know, so these are all like...
I don't think Ben Stokes will bowl at all.
Unlikely.
So they're off, you know, pace off bowlers are all Sam Curran, David Willey, Chris Woakes. How effective are these guys going to be in India? I mean, we saw these guys in IPL. They get hammered. So that is their problem. I think that is also Australia's problem. No? So they have to now rely on Zampa and Maxwell. Maxwell got four wickets in the last... match.
Maxwell is going to be like their leading bowler, man.
But dude, you want to go to World Cup with Maxwell as one of your spinning options. One match, he will give you 2-3 wickets, but then he'll get hammered, dude. I mean,
He's the Yuvraj of 2011.
So, that is a problem. Now, Cricinfo says Marnus Labuschagne is an all-rounder. I refuse to buy that argument.
No. Labuschagne will not bowl that much. He'll get hammered. Yeah,
he'll get hammered. Steve Smith will get hammered. So, their problem is, I mean, they could use Travis Head, you know, a little bit, but Travis Head is also injured. So, now their problem is, middle overs, they have to go with Zampa and, you know, Maxwell, Cameron Green, Stoinis if he plays, Mitchell Marsh if he bowls, Sean Abbott if he plays. So they are screwed. I mean, they also have a Pakistan problem. So Pakistan problem is not unique to Pakistan. Pakistan problem is shared by, you know,
England, Australia.
England and Australia. They have that problem. So, but, you know, even New Zealand, to an extent, they have that problem. I mean, Sodhi will get hammered if he keeps bowling one shot every over. But Sodhi is more, is actually, in defense of Sodhi, he's a genuine bowler. He's not a Maxwell.
He's a full-time bowler.
So New Zealand, South Africa, Bangladesh have control in the middle a little bit than, say, Australia, England and Pakistan. So that's the problem with these three teams. But see, now you flip it. Australia, England and Pakistan all have terrific battings. I mean, at least to the extent that they can make 320. Then if you blast the top order, even if you don't get middle order wickets, you know, you can choke them out. So there is an option there.
Especially Australia and England, they are packed with hitters.
So which Bangladesh does not have. New Zealand has to a bit. South Africa really do have it. But so that's the problem. So these teams are very dependent on how it goes on that day. I mean, condition dependent team selection this has been. It's not like, these teams have been ticking all the boxes. Like, Indians have been so, you know, myopic with our selection battles and our commentary around selection. We don't realize how good a squad these Indians have assembled. They have actually assembled a pretty good squad considering other teams.
We should come to that. So first, the most important thing to begin with, justice for Ashwin.
Justice for Ashwin. We have finally won. Democracy has erupted gloriously.
This is the revolution. The revolution is here.
This is the beginning of things to change. This is how a new India will be born under, you know, Ashwin's 30-wicket World Cup campaign.
Dude, but honestly, Ashoka, even as the biggest Ashwin fan, you'll agree he's a downgrade from Akshar, right?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Immediately, I will agree. Akshar, not having Akshar is a big blow for India, actually. That number 8 slot, it was the problem child of the 2019 World Cup. It is now the problem child of this World Cup as well.
What do you mean number 8? I thought number 4 was the problem child. Now it became number 8.
Array, the real problem was that we went to 2019 World Cup with what? 4 tail-enders, man. So now the problem is, like, you can't score. And you have to... Rohit Sharma was in the first 10 overs, was going at 70 strike rate. That was the problem. No, that was ultimately the problem of 2019 and that period, entire period. Our strategy was based on, we'll have 4 good bowlers to blow the opposition away. And then, you know, we set our teams for the 270-290 matches. So now Ashwin is not that bad. I mean, Ashwin can hit. It'll be, you know, a criminal to say that he's a tail-ender. But still, he's not an Axar level six-hitter. And with Jadeja's slightly dodgy form, that becomes a problem. You know, your top 6 has to now play 40-45 overs. But still, these are minor niggles, dude. Now, as we see other squads, India looks to be the far more, you know, sorted out team.
Afghanistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, all of them, right? If they can get the right conditions, then they will be a handful even for England, Australia, South Africa type. So, what I'm saying is, we cannot look at them from the Indian prism. We have to look at them as, when Australia plays against Bangladesh or Afghanistan, what are the kind of pitches that Afghanistan can really challenge them? And there are pitches where Afghanistan can challenge Australia. Yeah,
fine. Even then, I would not clump Bangladesh with Sri Lanka and Afghanistan. I think, you know, you have your... Bangladesh is far closer to your South Africa, New Zealand, Pakistan grouping than Sri Lanka, Afghanistan grouping. Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, I would say Bangladesh, if things go right, can win 4 or 5. I don't see Sri Lanka winning 4 or 5. I don't see Afghanistan winning 4 or 5. Even if conditions favor them. They don't have the... See, the problem is the other teams that we talked about, they have one big problem area, but the other area such as the batting or, you know, your pace bowling is all set. They have one weak link. These guys have weak links on both ends. So that's a problem for them. I mean, obviously, Netherlands, they qualified, good for them. I don't... They might pull an upset or two. I think you can clump Sri Lanka and Afghanistan with Netherlands more than, you know, your Bangladesh. Bangladesh is definitely a better team.
Yeah.
There aren't really any, you know, there aren't really any minnows in, you know, of, you know, in like, you know, New Zimbabwe in 2007 or USA or Hong Kong or like, you know, those types of minnows are not there. That's the
Bermuda,
one of the
Bermuda.
Things that happens.
Don't forget Bermuda.
Bermuda. That sort of thing doesn't really happen anymore because of, you know, they've basically eliminated those minnows from the main tournament. So, I mean, look, I don't think there's any team where, you know, the way you think about it is like this, right? So, if two teams are roughly equal now, then they'll win roughly half the games against each other, you know. And then there'll be teams where they'll win maybe 3 out of 4 against each other. And then there are like the more like the rank minnow opponents, you know, like India and Bermuda, where they'll probably expect to win 49 out of 50. And those are not there anymore. So this is one of the reasons why this is such an open World Cup, I think, because, you know, the fact that there are no real genuine minnows who are like a bankable win for any team, you know, means that getting to 5 is that much harder, you know, because it's not like, you know, there are 5 or 6 teams which are more or less guaranteed to win 2 or 3 games, you know, against 2 or 3 opponents. And then it comes down to, you know, the 3 or 4 other fixtures against roughly equal opponents. It's not like that, no. I mean, I can see Sri Lanka beating Australia. I can see Sri Lanka on its day beating Pakistan. I can see Sri Lanka beating India. You know, you can see Afghanistan causing all kinds of problems to all kinds of teams, you know, especially if they get like a, you know, a good spinner's pitch, which it minimizes their disadvantage of not having any real new ball bowling.
Okay, tell me this. I know you've often said that India were, you know, really extremely well prepared for the 2019 World Cup and should have, if they had won the 2019 World Cup, it would have been like a perfect just sort of a reward for how they approached that World Cup and what they were trying to do. How would you compare India's current squad before this World Cup to that 2019 World Cup team?
In an interesting way, I mean, they're trying to construct efficient squads. You know, I mean, I think, I know that this is a sort of a bit of a sore point, especially among, you know, cricket fans of your generation, Sid. But I think the great change that Chappell brought is that he made it normal for India to try to construct efficient teams. No, I mean, you have to build a team where, you know, you have to make sure that your weakest player is still competitive, no, in the 11, or a competitive contribution is made from the like the 9th, 10th, 11th weakest player in your 11, and that's something that India pursued, especially ever since Chappell took the job, ever since Ganguly lost his captaincy, that efficiency has been pursued. You know, like it's no longer about, you know, whether you fit Tendulkar in the middle order, whether you fit him against the new ball, or anything like that. You know, it's not about that accommodating one player. It's not about getting the most out of one player. It's about getting the most out of all 11 players. Like you compete for 600 balls and you have to be set up to compete as well as possible for as many of those 600 balls as possible, you know. And that's one of the reasons why I think India's one day results have improved out of sight in the last 15, 17 years. You know, it's because they've become so much more efficient at competing in one day cricket. Because one day cricket still is a contest of efficiency in large part, you know. Because there are bowling restrictions, because the opposition's best bowler can't just keep bowling from one end all the time. You know, so it is a contest of efficiency. You have to find that player who, you know, when you have the opposition four down for not very many, you have to have that player who will give you like three or four cheap overs. You know, you have to have that fast bowler who will break a stand. You have to have the lefty in the middle order who will come and force the opposition to change, not let the opposition's as slow left arm orthodox bowler just keep bowling. You know, and India have always tried to find those kinds of players. They've tried to find those kinds of fits. And yeah, there is a lot of this. I don't know if you read some of these reports, but there's suddenly a lot of concern about like, oh, Ravindra Jadeja's form is not there and all that. I don't really think that matters very much, you know, because he's anyway, Jadeja is a bit of a floater, you know, he's a sort of.
As Ashoka said, I think a lot of this is we living in a bubble, you know, and in just discussing among ourselves, this Jadeja's form is down, this, that. But if you look at the big picture and compare it with other teams have bigger problems, man.
No, every team has problems. I think if you want to know what I think India's big problem is, it is that their balance is dependent on one player for whom they don't have any backup. And, you know, Hardik Pandya gives them that balance. Yeah. And they have no backup option for Hardik Pandya. No seam bowling hitter. Who, if something happens to Hardik Pandya, their whole balance is gone for a toss. Because what Hardik Pandya gives them is the third seamer, which allows them to play three spinners, right? So they can play Kuldeep Yadav, Akshar Patel and Jadeja if they have Hardik Pandya. And then they can play Bumrah and Siraj or Bumrah and Shami. And that's still like six really good options with the ball. You know, but if you don't have Hardik Pandya suddenly, then either you have to play the third fast bowler, which means you have to play either Shami or Shardul Thakur, which means you have to weaken your spin bowling, which means all the balance goes off. You know, so really, if you're an India fan and if you want India to do well, then if you want to say one prayer, say a prayer for Hardik Pandya's fitness, honestly. Because that's the weak link for India.
One of the players who I think will be huge for India, and I'm really, especially when the, you know, if they can get big scores and if the asking rate is going high, is Kuldeep. I mean, and given how Kuldeep has been bowling in the Asia Cup and this, I think he's so valuable. He's going to be so valuable for those 10 overs. And it's teams are going to not find it easy to hit him. And even if they try and hit him, he's going to get those wickets in the middle over. So I think I'm really looking forward to watching Kuldeep in this World Cup.
I mean, and he's become like a different bowler, you know. I mean, when he started out, he was getting a lot of wickets in the one-day game. Like, that one of the reasons why he played, one of the reasons why Chahal played is because Ashwin and Jadeja were not getting wickets in the middle overs in one-day games. So, and these guys, they started getting like a couple of wickets a game on average. You know, so I mean, one of the things that Kuldeep has done is that he's made himself able to bowl a little quicker, a little flatter, you know, and one of the, and so India had this advantage, like where they have, you know, both Bumrah and Kuldeep are unusual bowlers, you know, and in one day cricket, when the batter is taking so many chances against you, that I think that helps get some wickets, you know, because, you know, the bat. I mean, Kuldeep, for example, gets a lot of wickets because, you know, once you get to the middle order, you know, there are batters who just don't pick him from the hat. Like, they don't know which way he's turning it, whether it's a googly or a leg break, they don't know. So yeah, this is one of the reasons why he gets like 2 wickets a game.
Yeah, and I must also link the podcast we did at 81 All Out with Bharat Arun, the former India bowling coach. And even though Bharat Arun was a medium pacer and he was working with the fast bowlers quite a lot, he was also working with the spinners. And he himself claims that his passion is actually working with spin bowlers more than fast bowlers. And in that podcast, he had mentioned how he is expecting Kuldeep to pretty much reach his peak pretty soon. And he was watching him in, you know, in the warm-ups and practice games, and even the little bit he was seeing him. Well, that was a time when Kuldeep was not even, he was well out of the reckoning. But he had mentioned how he expects him to reach his peak pretty soon. And I think, yeah, I mean, he, the shrewd observer that Arun is, has been proven right yet again. And yeah, I think it won't be a surprise at all if Kuldeep ends up as one of the bowlers of the World Cup. And that's how well he was bowling in that Asia Cup. And any sort of conditions that help him, and especially hard, you know, it's like he has this Saqlain Mushtaq kind of vibe when the batters are trying to hit him. You know, that's when he's at his best, because when you're trying to go at 7-8 and over against Kuldeep, you're going for the big hit, and that's when he can get his wickets. And I think that's going to be a big portion of India's campaign in this World Cup. I think we are getting pretty close. We've discussed all teams. We've covered mostly. I mean, we will of course, review games during the World Cup. We will have podcasts where we will look back at a set of games or a game, or if there's any theme that develops, we will obviously talk about all that. So hopefully this gave you a sort of a whet your appetite for the World Cup. Not that we needed to do that, but yeah, sort of set the stage. 81allout.com is our website. We are at 81allout on Twitter. And you can also, you know, contribute whatever amount of your choice if you want via Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/81allout. We are a crowdfunded platform, so anything would be really helpful. And we thank all of you who are contributing already for your generosity. We are also in the book republishing space. As many of you know, we have republished 3 books so far. But today I'm going to specifically talk about and try and plug War Minus the Shooting by Mike Marcusi, which was the book written about the 1996 World Cup, also held in the subcontinent. And it's a terrific sort of tour diary and analytical work and sociological work and everything in between. So you should pick it up. You should read about how it was in 1996. You should read about the impact of that tournament and then the various themes that ran across that tournament. So please pick it up. I'll put the link. And the other 2 books as well, I'll put the link for Cricket Beyond the Bazaar and The Summer Game by Gideon Hay. Thank you for joining, and we'll join you in about 10 days' time for the next episode. Thanks, Ashoka. Thanks, Kartikeya. India.